Schopenhauer, however, wants to rid philosophy of God altogether. If we're to make sense of our lives, he says, we must do so without God. Schopenhauer was beginning to develop his own philosophical voice, but he'd not yet introduced the idea of the will that was to form the essence of his philosophy. The ideas that make his philosophy pessimistic are fully developed in his later works. Upon finishing his work on the principle of sufficient reason, Schopenhauer returned from Rudolstadt to Weimar. His poor relationship with his mother made the stay both unpleasant and brief. One of their arguments grew out of some uncomplimentary remarks she made about the title of his book, The Fourfold Root of the Principle of Sufficient Reason. Schopenhauer hotly responded that his book would still be around when the drivel she was publishing had long since vanished. She coolly replied that his entire first edition would probably still be around for some time. Schopenhauer also was undoubtedly rankled because his mother's literary salon made her the most well-known Schopenhauer in Weimar. He was known as Johannes Schopenhauer's son. There was, however, one high point of his stay in Weimar. He renewed his acquaintance with the German poet Goethe. He'd met the poet earlier when he first came to Weimar, but during Schopenhauer's stay in 1813, they became friends. Oddly, they didn't spend much time discussing poetry or literature. They talked about Goethe's scientific interests. Goethe introduced Schopenhauer to his optical theories about color. According to Isaac Newton, color is explained by the nature of light, but Goethe emphasized the role of the subject who perceives color. Schopenhauer sided with Goethe. After moving to Dresden in 1814, Schopenhauer wrote a pamphlet on this subject entitled On Vision and Colors. Remarkably, Schopenhauer wasn't overwhelmed by Goethe. Not only was Goethe 30 years older than Schopenhauer, but he was also famous for his literary genius. A weaker personality might have fallen under the spell of someone like Goethe. Schopenhauer did find Goethe's views on color congenial to his own account of visual perception, but his pamphlet is not simply a defense of Goethe's view. Instead, it looks ahead to his own major work. Perhaps Goethe sensed this, for when Schopenhauer sent him a copy, he received the piece without enthusiasm. Goethe wrote of their strained relationship.
We dealt with many things in mutual agreement, but at last a sudden division became inevitable, as when two friends who have hitherto gone together say goodbye, the one, however, wanting to go north, the other south, so that they very speedily lose sight of each other.
After writing the pamphlet on colors, Schopenhauer began writing his masterpiece, The World Has Will and Representation. It took 4 years to finish. Schopenhauer felt it gave definitive answers to the major philosophical questions. 2 years after his book was published, Schopenhauer decided that he might promote his views by becoming a university professor. He traveled to Berlin and obtained a position at the university. Evidently, Schopenhauer aimed to do battle with Hegel, who was at the height of his popularity. He scheduled his lectures at the same hours as Hegel's, but the battle never took place. No one came to Schopenhauer's lectures, so he was unable to give them. Some say that he gave them to an empty room. The next 15 years of Schopenhauer's life were uneventful. He traveled to Italy and Switzerland and eventually returned to Berlin, but he never again ventured into the academic life of the university. He wrote nothing during this time. In 1831, a cholera plague hit Berlin, and at age 43, Schopenhauer fled to the city of Frankfurt. There he was to spend the rest of his life. He began writing again. He first published a work called On the Will in Nature in 1836. This book was followed by an essay called The Freedom of the Will. This won a prize from the Scientific Society of Norway in 1839. He also submitted an essay to the Danish Academy of the Sciences, The Foundations of Morality. He was refused the prize, even though his essay was the only entry. According to Schopenhauer, each of these works develops the same ideas originally expressed in his main work, The World as Will and Representation. 1844 saw a second edition of this work, but the second edition is not a revised edition of the first. Schopenhauer added a second volume of essays to communicate the same ideas, but in a style improved by the experience of age. According to Schopenhauer, each volume has its own strengths.
If, therefore, the first half of my work excels the second half in what can be vouchsafed only by the fire of youth and the energy of first conception, then the second will surpass the first in the maturity and complete elaboration of the ideas, which belongs only to the fruit of a long life and of its application and industry.
Schopenhauer published his final work in 1851. It was a collection of essays called Parerga and Paralipomena. The Greek words in the title mean additions and omissions. The essays, as the title suggests, elaborate the main ideas of Schopenhauer's philosophy. They're written in a more casual style intended for the general public. 2 years after this last work, in 1853, a review of Schopenhauer's works appeared in a periodical called the Westminster Review. The article, entitled Iconoclasm in German Philosophy, was the spark that ignited enthusiasm for Schopenhauer's philosophy. Enthusiasm spread to Germany and finally brought Schopenhauer the recognition he'd sought all his life. The anonymous reviewer praises Schopenhauer's stylistic skill and his philosophical acumen.
Few indeed, we venture to assert, will be those of our English readers who are familiar with the name of Arthur Schopenhauer. Fewer still will there be who are aware that the mysterious being owning that name has been working for something like 40 years to subvert that whole system of German philosophy which has been raised by the university professors since the decease of Immanuel Kant, and that after his long labor, he has just succeeded in making himself heard, wonderfully illustrating that doctrine in acoustics which shows how long an interval may elapse between the discharge of the cannon and the hearing of the report. And still fewer will there be who are aware that Arthur Schopenhauer is one of the most ingenious and readable authors in the world, skillful in the art of theory building, universal in attainments, inexhaustible in the power of illustration, terribly logical, and unflinching in the pursuit of consequences.
The last years of Schopenhauer's life were undoubtedly the happiest. His work finally had been recognized as important, and in Frankfurt he was surrounded by philosophical admirers. One of his French admirers, Fouché de Corella, vividly describes the older Schopenhauer.
His blue, lively eyes, his thin lips, about which played a fine, sarcastic smile, his broad brow, framed by two white locks of hair, put the stamp of distinction and nobility upon his physiognomy, which sparkled with wit and mischief. Of a retiring disposition, often bordering on the suspicious, he consorted with only his most intimate friends or with the strangers who came to visit Frankfurt. His conversation bubbled over with witticisms, citations, and interesting details, making the hours pass unnoticed.
Schopenhauer enjoyed the attention lavished on him in his later years. A continuous stream of visitors to Frankfurt contrasted sharply with his earlier isolation. He had lived to see the beginnings of his influence when his heart failed in 1860 at the age of 72.